Hello and welcome back to the Master of None podcast. I am your host, Stephen Murphy. I'm joined with the regular rugby crew that is Sam and Westy. We are here and I can only speak for myself, but I'm pissed off. This is one of the days where it's a weekend of sports that has just thrown it back in my face. I will see if the lads feel the same. But before we get stuck into the misery, we'll check in as always with the boys. Westy, how art thou?
I'm pretty good. Disappointed after most of the professional rugby results, let's say, over the weekend. But for my own sake, I'm pretty happy. We had a win yesterday in our quarterfinal, so we're on now to semi-final next week. Personally, it's going good. But in terms of like what I use to distract myself from my pretty mundane personal life, those other sports aren't going so well.
Yeah, I went to view the game. I was in attendance. And Wesley kind of blanked me at the end. Not gonna lie, I didn't see him. He kind of big-balled me. I didn't appreciate it, Wesley.
You definitely weren't at the game.
He was at the game. I was talking to him.
Sam, I was at the game.
Yeah. I have no memory of this.
I texted the WhatsApp before I was going to go to the game. Do you think I was lying?
Yeah, I thought you didn't come because of the weather.
No, he was there.
The weather was atrocious. Yeah, I did. I arrived like 10 minutes into the game because obviously I was, for some reason, watched the full 80 minutes of the Connacht game. That's on me, you know, that's on me. And then I arrived and the rain was coming inside. It was horrific. And the temperature dropped about 5 degrees. So I did go inside to watch the first half. And then it cleared up for second half, which was quite nice. But no, I was there, Westy. I had my Westy scrum cap on. I had a wig on. I can't believe you didn't see me.
No, I didn't see you. You should have been cheering louder. Then maybe I would have fucked you, but yeah.
That's fair. But Sam, you're a real friend. You come to see me afterwards, so I appreciate that. But Sam, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Like yourself and Westy, sports just failed me this week. Liverpool fan, Rory fan, Connacht fan. Have a soft enough spot for Ulster. Didn't go well. Did not go well. A Jordy Barrett fan. Really didn't go well. So outside, yeah, played a match, which was quarterfinal of the Ordinary Craig, and we won. So that was a good result. We can probably talk about that in 45, 50 minutes, maybe. No time really to get to anything else, I don't think.
Nothing really happened. Golf, we can go talk about golf, but that's also going to upset me. Yeah, went to see us. Yeah, great win. Some really good, actually, rugby played by yourselves, considering the conditions. Handling was very, very impressive. And you have a couple of dogs, a couple of lads just like love physicality and love the aggression of it. The likes of your man Kane, he's amazing. He's brilliant.
You name your kid Kane, you're going to want one of the brothers of disruption. Like, that's just still how it works. There's a Kane Barrett as well, so.
Maybe rumors he's signing with Connacht. Rumor is hot off the press. What else? Yeah, Masters was on for the weekend. Obviously, I'm a huge golf fan and a huge Rory McIlroy fan. And you know what? I'm just kind of done with the whole thing. I was saying to Westy, let's just think of another sport.
You tried tennis last year. You got big into tennis for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but it's a good weather sport, which is like 2 months. Do you know what I mean? That's the problem with tennis. Maybe an indoor. Maybe curling. Is anyone up for some curling?
Table tennis?
Like tennis? I used to love table tennis.
I play in school all the
time. Yeah, and you can play indoors. Right. I'll tell your kids I will kick the crap out of them in any game if they want it. If they want to step up, Sam, you let them know, okay? What age are these kids?
Between 9 and 12.
Perfect. Right in my favorite category of kicking the crap out of in table tennis. Tell you that. Let's get stuck in. Yeah, do please. We will start before we get into any of the games. We have some breaking news, hot off the press. As the time of recording, it's hot off the press. But there was rumours, a buzz on Twitter today, the artist formerly known as Twitter, about Leinster with a big signing. And then around an hour before the actual announcement, it was leaking that it was Jordy Barrett. And yes, it's a confirmed Jordy Barrett is signing with Leinster on a short-term deal. So he joins Leinster in December of this year and will be there until the end of the season, 2024. So it's about 6 months. I'd imagine huge money. I don't know. Someone asked me on Twitter there about the money. If it was a full season, I was guessing a full season, like $500,000. But if it's only 6 months, I genuinely wouldn't even know what an educated guess here is. Sam, what do you think?
No, I don't know. Like, you hear rumors of these kind of $500,000-$600,000 contracts in Japan and France. For a New Zealander to take a sabbatical, it's going to be, you know, because it's part of his extension with the All Blacks and the Hurricanes. He's getting a sabbatical. So he's coming here instead of Japan, or one or two have gone France, but some have just gone to kind of France for a year or two off and then moved back. and it's usually big money. But I wouldn't have a clue. Leinster definitely have a lot of leftover disposable income with all the central contracts they have. So I wouldn't have a beginner's guess where, but it's going to be worth his while. It might not be as fruitful as one of those Japan ones, but he said, you know, he wanted to move back to Ireland at some point to just give it a go. I'm hearing from a friend of mine who knows people in the Leinster setup that Geordie was keen to try Europe at some point, and then through contacts and the Leinster ties, you know, having spent a bit of time here as a kid and with some family ties in the area. I think his parents are from Ireland. It kind of made sense just for that. And it is, like, from a Leinster point of view, it's bringing in a win now situation. It's like, you know, a deadline day deal just to get yourselves over to the Super Bowl. If they're in Europe, if they don't get knocked out in the group stages the next year, they have Orgy Snyman coming back from whatever injury he's got, and Jordy Barrett coming in then for the last couple of months of the season. It looks like a fairly good setup for everyone. It's just a strange signing, though. 6 months for a player in a position, in a lot of positions that they are stacked. I wonder, would it indicate maybe word from Andy Farrell that maybe rest up Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw as much as possible, and Hugo Keenan ahead of the Lions after the Six Nations could just be kind of getting those players some rest in a good rotation system.
Yeah, which is crazy when you think of it that way, that's what they're capable of signing for rest. It's obviously tough to take for other provinces, even harder to take when they announced to Westie that Dan Sheehan today is going on a central contract. So that's 9 now central contracts on the Leinster team. 1 in Connacht, 1 in Ulster. And I think is it now 1 in Munster?
As of the end of the season, it'll be 1. They're 3 at the moment, but
Murray
and O'Mahony come off them at the end of this year.
Yeah, but they're still partial IRFU contracts, right? Like they're not full central contracts.
Yeah. No.
So we can give them 2, because they got 2 halves. So we can give them 2 for argument.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. So 2 in Munster, 1 Ulster, so 1 Ollie, Connacht, and 9 in Leinster.
Ollie Yeager and Simon Zebo were both half IRFU deals as well, weren't they?
Zebo did come back on a half deal. Yeah, he did. And Yeager, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of Munster fans in my Twitter replies being like, you know, yeah, this is disgraceful, like Bannon Brothers thing. I'm kind of pushing my distance to myself. My Ulster brethren, absolutely. Come on down. You know what I mean? Plenty of room for you here at the inn. Munster, you're
still
sort
got,
of.
They're still spent kids, still got a South African World Cup winner.
On a short term deal.
It didn't work out,
okay?
It didn't work out, Westy.
I was talking to someone there the other day. We were talking about the signings and. I brought up the comment. I said, "Connacht are the only players that haven't signed a South, or the only team that haven't signed a South African World Cup winner." He was like, "Who did Leinster sign?" And I was like, "Nina Barr."
Like, Orgy Snyman.
Well, yeah, for next season they got Snyman. But yeah,
did Jenkins win a World Cup
one
title?
Cap. No. He wasn't in the squad.
Yeah, Westy. Like, I'm very annoyed about this. It sounds very sour grapes, but like. I was saying to you before we started recording, I think Connacht, like, what did Connacht do? Like, why did Connacht even bother showing up the training tomorrow morning? Why did they even bother participating in this? I'm suggesting we turn our talents to volleyball. You kind of mentioned Niall Murray, you know, Gav Thornbury, Dara Murray. I think that would be a sick team.
Or she gets some sweet air.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you could propel them because... Again, as a Connacht fan now, I'm looking at that, and again, it just brings me back to, like, what is the point? I'm in a very negative headspace right now, Westy, and I need you to be my therapist for a little bit.
I think it just makes it all the more sweeter when we do get that rare win against Leinster, you know, where we're able to trouble them a little bit, even if it's, you know, a weekend Leinster team come down here later on in the season and we run them close. You know, we've a long storied history in Connacht of doing a lot more with a lot less. Be that in terms of resources or in terms of you know, the size of the contracts that our players are on. It is, you know, it is starting to get more troubling, and I hope maybe, like, New Sephora did some good in terms of moving players around and encouraging players to move if they're not getting game time, but, you know, also was very happy to let the kind of Leinster machine take over. I would hope with Humphreys coming in, but there will be some change to the structure. Now, like, it's tough as well, right? Because you can't punish Leinster too much for being successful, right? It's, you know, they've got a quarter of the population, in Dublin alone, they've got a quarter of the population. And, you know, they have, they're producing talent as well, right? But I mean, I think more has to be done in terms of leveling that playing field. Be that a case where, like we've said it before in this podcast, maybe one or two, well, not one or two, two or three central contracts per province, so that if you're on a central contract, you have to make a decision where do you want the payday, or to move, or to stay on a lower contract, to kind of even out the budgets a little bit. Having said that, like, you know, like Leinster filled the Aviva Stadium, Connacht wouldn't fill the Aviva Stadium for a match, we know that. So it, like, it's not as if all of the money is being funneled into them, and you know, we're getting nothing. That, like, they do generate quite a lot of money as well, so it's harder to punish them. But when they keep getting signings like this, it just kind of spits in the face of, you know, Connacht having to recruit players from the Bunnings NPC, or trying, you know, recruiting. We recruited Lever Fida from Pro D Duh, you know, when we signed, we had the coach come over as well. So it just makes it harder to you know, the great line of Pat Lamb and Andy Friend of, you know, we used to shop and they shop in Brown Thomas, we shop in Aldi. It doesn't really ring true when they're not only shopping in Brown Thomas, but they're having fancy French desserts flown in on a private jet to Dublin Airport. You know, it's kind of just, it makes it harder to stomach. But look, you would hope a rising tide lifts all boats. It's good for Leinster, might trickle down to us. But I do think more has to be done now. If Leinster are going to sign players like this, that, you know, I don't want to bring it down too much, but like their wage bill must be astronomical. Take away the central contracts, their wage bill still must be ridiculous. So something has to be done to kind of to level the playing field, or to help the other provinces catch up. Because all I'm seeing at the minute is Leinster pull further and further ahead, and particularly from a Connacht perspective, it's pretty heartbreaking to watch.
Sam, you'll enjoy this. They, on the tweet announcing Jordy Barrett, they used the hashtag from the ground up, which is just, I mean, surely that should have been left out. I don't know if that was, maybe they're just kind of like, screw it, we know we're doing this, and just take it, and we kind of have to, don't we? But your thoughts on, you know, Hurricanes fan that you are, seeing your beloved Jordy now in the blue of Leinster, becoming one of the goalies, it's hard pill to swallow, I imagine.
Probably tarnish it forever, yeah. I think when he goes back to Canes, it'll make it a little bit harder to really care for him. No, that's harsh. He's a fantastic player and I love him loads, but it's going to be hard to see him in blue. From the ground up thing, I think, Wesley, you were saying like leveling the playing field. I don't think that's ever an like aspiration, but what I do think is kind of, you made the point, the trickling down, bringing the floor up of, you know, I'm saying floor as in Connacht, Ulster to an extent, Munster a little bit ahead. But bringing that up, like, we don't have the manpower just in terms of sheer population, money and stuff. There are players there. Like, if you look at Jordy Barrett, he's pretty much an identical signing to the likes of Kieran Frawley. He's a recently 12, played a lot of 15, can cover wing and has played a bit of 10. And that's the Frawley role. Frawley is...
He kicks.
And he kicks monstrously. But so that's the, you know, the Frawley role. Frawley, Deegan, some of these squad fringe players should be moved on. You can't force someone to go somewhere either. That's not, you know, it's not, they're not slaves. You can't force them to go where you want, but there should be incentives, like Wesley said, a central contract or something like that in the other provinces. The only problem with that, though, is that doesn't close any gap. That's still the cast off that they have replaced with the player they feel is or deem is better. They've signed a big name and they've cast off. So until such a time as something can happen on an academic or an academy or a draft level, there's never going to be any parity. It's bringing us up so that Connacht don't fall by the wayside, so that Ulster don't fall out of the top eight and stop being competitive, and then give the IRFU and the Irish fans more excuse to just toe in behind Leinster and go, well, like, look, they're not even competitive in the league. The old argument of maybe making them into development teams, you know, not really resourcing them as strong as they should, and allowing that disparity to grow. That's the worry. I don't think it will. I think that Connacht are in a good place. I think that this season's not gone great, but it's still early. Ulster the same. Ulster have stacked in squads. There are players around, but it does. Whatever you say, you're going to come across as sour grapes, because they've just signed Jordy Barrett on the day that they've announced that Dan Sheehan's contract is going to be paid for by the IRFU. That is just, it's trolling on Leinster's part. It's brilliant. It's phenomenal. In terms of, if you were a Leinster fan, you'd be overjoyed because of it. But it's hard to stomach from the outside. And then to look at where we are now and Mac Hansen, Santi Cordero being out all season. Seamus Hurley-Langton has been an absolute find. He's a phenomenal player, but like that, Leinster don't really have to go finding those finds. They create a lot of them, and then when they don't, they just buy. They can bring in an ORG or an Alalatoa, like a 75 capped Crusader, Samoan captain, Charlie Natai, former All Black. It is hard to stomach considering how much wealth of talent they have in their midst that they can go and then get that standard of caliber of signing, not just signings. We signed Bundy when he was relatively known, but he was not the Bundy we know now. We signed Santi Cordero, who's 50 caps for Argentina. Huge, huge signing, and it's just not happened yet. Hopefully next season, but I don't see Connacht ever being in a position to sign anyone of the caliber of Orji Simon, Damon D'Allende, Stephen Kitsoff, Dwayne Vermeulen, Charlie Natai, or Jordy Barrett. I don't think that'll ever happen. You know, we might get Emils Mulliaina at the tail end of his career when he just preferred to drink Guinness, but it's not the same.
Yeah, the way I always sum it up is like we're signing players hoping they become good, whereas Leinster are signing lads who are instantly, they know they're going to be really, really good straight away. And that's tough. It'll be, hopefully we get to see Jordy Barrett playing in the sports ground. That would be pretty cool if that happens. But
I'd love to see him kicking in the wind, actually. Let's see how good he is at kicking in the wind.
Yeah, but also downwind, he probably could kick it to like,
America.
I don't even know, like Moy Cullen, I was going to say, could probably kick it that far with buying the win. But that's one piece of depressing news. Let's go to an even bigger piece of depressing news. Connacht were in the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup away to Benetton Rugby in what was beautiful conditions. I think it was like 28 degrees locally. Unreal conditions, looked amazing. I know a big travelling support went over. Connacht actually did a great deal with the flying over with the team. In fairness, that was pretty good value for flights and accommodation. Unfortunately, being back from the States, I couldn't justify it. I think you guys are in similar positions. But I was on the couch an hour before the game looking up. I was like, oh, Gloucester away, semi-finals? That I'm totally in on. That would be a great weekend away. You know, easy to get the girlfriend involved. But Connacht went and royally put their foot on it and lost by 15 points, 39-24. I took some notes. That's how annoyed I was at the game. Connacht started brilliantly, of course. Win a penalty early on, kicked to the corner. Maul looked dominant in that first one. I was like, oh, brilliant. There's an area we can exploit. Dave Heffernan bowls over. We're 7-0 up. And then brilliant. Darmer then kind of gives away a bad yellow card. It's not bad in the sense of not dangerous. He just doesn't anticipate the Benetton player cutting back and doesn't get low. And you know, he's tall as it is, never mind when he's not hinged. So, bad yellow card there. And Benetton scored two tries in that 10 minutes. Again, kind of highlighting Connacht's inability to manage yellow cards, both with a yellow card advantage and against the yellow card advantage. Not their highlights. But the big errors from the first half were letting balls bounce from high kicks. Connacht did it. There was at least three in the first half, the balls that bounced, and one led to a try, if not more than that, which is just really amateur stuff. Like, again, I went to your game at the weekend, and I think there was one ball that bounced, and like immediately someone was given out. And that was at whatever level that is, Jade. I don't even know what letter or number of it officially it is, but this is a professional knockout quarterfinal game of Europe and lads are letting the balls bounce. And I've seen people in line being like, oh, the sun was shining. And I'm just like, if that's the level of excuses we're going to, then, I mean, good luck. Caelan Blade had some really kind of bad errors as well. One of them being from a high ball. He went up to catch what I thought, but he slapped it back. In fairness to Tiernan, there's not much he could have done because the ball bounced awkwardly. And then they ran under the post, and it's like, you know, I can see what Blade was trying to do, but if you can get under it and you can actually slap it, you can probably try and catch it. And then Dave Heffernan's one, of course, where he sort of just jogs back to a high ball. It bounces twice, and it bounces up to the hands of the Benetton player who runs it under the post. And a lot of the commentators were saying, yeah, you know, oh, unlucky bounce the ball there for Connacht. Well, don't let the fucking thing bounce then. And it just, you know, really frustrating to watch. Real lack of pop about the team, a real lack of energy about the team. Like Bundy just didn't look like he was there at all at times, and he sort of is the spark. He is that kind of level set for the rest of the players. I'm sure he's tired, but like at the end of the day, so is everybody else. Yeah, and a few other things as well. Like this is not a knock on Matthew Devine, but like this is a big knockout quarterfinal game, and we're bringing on this sub. I know injuries, but like depth of squad, we're bringing on a sub who just signed his first pro contract. What, 3 days before that? No, he actually played pretty well, but like, you know, it's just, again, it's more of a question of maybe squad depth. I know we let Marmion go, which is huge, and I don't know if we let him go as more as he wanted to go, whatever, but really, really frustrating. Like, don't deserve to win any game, never mind a knockout game in Europe, with the amount of mistakes that was made by the team overall. And then rather, almost more annoyingly, they like towards the end, they showed patches of really good play and scored a try. And like, I'd rather you just like nearly lost by 50 at this stage. Do you know what I mean? Because then like, there's that little bit of like, oh, well, like, at least they put together for a few phases. No, it was all terrible. I was really, really negative afterwards. That's up there with the Lions in terms of performance for me, although the Lions was probably worse. But for a knockout quarterfinal game to show up like that, with that level of energy, that level of focus, is inexcusable to me. I don't know where the questions have to be asked. I think it's players, being honest with you, because, sorry, I'm ranting on this one, but like in terms of the restarts and all that, there's no way the coaches aren't highlighting that. There's no way that's not been worked on. There's no way that that stuff is just being left by the wayside, and yet it's still happening. And to me, that's a players thing. I don't know if they just don't like being told sometimes what they don't want to hear. I don't know what the answers are, what the questions are. But that was an alarming performance for me to view, and a frustrating one. But I suppose I've spoken there for a long time. Sam, you are the beacon of positivity on this podcast. You've watched the game back, because obviously you were playing in your own game at the time. But what's your thoughts?
I'll try and spin some positivity into this, but it's getting harder and harder as the week goes on. And the weeks go on. It's been a rough couple of weeks there for Connacht. With the odd little up as well, when you go, oh, okay, it's all going to happen now. The first minute or two, the Heffernan try, really well worked. I was saying Cup Rugby take the kick, but they went to the corner. In fairness, they backed themselves and they mauled again like they did last week, really strongly, and they got through. Then Darren Murray got his yellow card, and it seemingly fell apart from there. I don't blame the first try really. You're low on numbers, and they go to the corner and they maul over. That happens, but after that, it didn't look like they managed it at all well. The game riddled with errors. So you said Bundy kind of didn't look like he was there at all. I think that's a bit harsh, personally. I think he was trying. He got through a lot of work. If you look statistics wise, he does a lot of work. He gets his try. He takes his try well. He, like I said last week, is noticeably a better player than everyone he's surrounded by. And that's just the reality of where we are right now. He's a Test Lion, Irish International Central Contract, Team of the Season, Six Nations, World Player of the Year nominee. He's trying things. He's not, you know, he's getting players, trying to get them to do things that maybe just not coming off the way it does in Ireland camp, and it takes time to adjust. And when your team aren't playing well, and you are on to quite a peak in terms of your performances recently, I don't think it matches up too well. So it's unfortunate for him, but I think he is integral to, if you want to play, if you want to try and get open. He saw last week, you know, the amount of attention he brings, it just didn't happen for him at the time. And whether or not that's the players around him or the game plan or what it is, I don't know. The game plan is a bit stock. It's a bit too obvious. I can tell when we're going to do that quick pullback to the 10, or the quick pullback and the loop around to the forward, or a flat line forward coming off the 10 or the 12 on the line. It's very obvious. And I'm hoping that just over the summer, the coaches are going to be able to put something more in place, and that this is just the start of the journey. I still am backing the coaches. I'm not giving up on the coaching ticket at all. I think that they have lost a bit of faith in some of the fan base, and they're going to have a hard time winning it back, because when you lose a fan base, fans are fickle, but they're also stubborn pricks, and it's hard to kind of get them back on side. So it will take something, you know, a monumental push for top eight would definitely help to lighten the load. But I do think that there's a lot of fans that have given up and have lost a lot of faith in this coaching ticket. It's hard to argue with them right now. I don't necessarily agree with your Devine point personally. McDonald's injured, we know that. Riley was out for a long time. Devine was in that Irish under-20s Grand Slam winning team last year, and the team, you know, if he was at Leinster, he'd have 7 or 8 or 9 caps for Leinster by now, because they integrate their under-20s phenomenally into their team through necessity, because their players aren't available. But we haven't done that as much, and we should be probably trying to do it. I know it's not worth the risk, but this wasn't a risk. This was literally out of necessity. We had injuries there. I would have preferred to have kept Marmion, yeah, but that wasn't an option at the time, be that finances or whatever it was in the long term planning. So that's just where we are now. So I don't really, I think himself, I think Devine, I think Devine and Jennings probably the two that can hold their hands up as players that were decent. I thought Oliver tried. I thought he came on, he played pretty well. But it's hard to do much from a position that we were in when we got there. And you know, Connacht are on the back foot for 90% of that game after the 2 minutes. So it's a hard one to put any positive spin on. I'm not going to try and make excuses, but supposedly it was very hot. It's hard to kind of imagine that heat, but I don't think that that is an excuse. It was hot for Benetton as well. There might be a little bit more used to it, but on the whole, it's sloppiness. It looks like a lack of confidence. It looks like players that are either trying too hard, you're making silly mistakes because they're trying too hard, or just not in any way confident in what they should be doing. And maybe that might be a coaching message. That might be a player kind of players understanding the tactics, the game plan, or it might literally just be they're worried about their position, their future, their literal careers, and they're trying things and it's not working, or they're too nervous on the ball. But something big is going to happen. We've heard rumors of a bit of a clear out this year. And a couple of years ago, there was another one. It was the year when there was about 7 or 8 players left, and we kind of said these are like stalwarts of Connacht, and said, yeah, but these are stalwarts of Connacht that haven't won anything. You know, some of them had been involved in that Pro 16 win, or Pro 12 win at the time. But it's, you know, this is, you're getting to a stage now where there's a lot of players there that have been around squads that we've had this conversation about. You know, it could be Benetton last year, it could be Edinburgh the year before, plenty of times where they've had big drubbings like that. And maybe it is just an issue of some players are too comfortable, some players aren't pushing themselves, some players aren't really going for it. And you do need to integrate more winning mentalities, a Josh Murphy, a Sean O'Brien that came in from Leinster, you know, Peter Dooley, some of these players could be coming in and replacing. So it's a hard one, but I think there'll be a push for top eight. And if they don't get it, there will be some big, big questions answered and probably some big names as well moving on.
Yeah, it's the kind of cycle that annoys me again as well, I think, and it's unfortunately a necessity one, but like, big clear players, then next year the cohesion isn't there, and then maybe the year after when the players start to get cohesive, maybe Mark Sexton moves on and a new coach comes in, and then you never get like a constant, you know, kind of state of affairs. Like, Westy, I thought his question of the day, what's Connacht's strongest 15? We don't know that this year. Like, there's always been players coming in and out. That's all well and good to a time being, but then when it comes to a knockout game, you know, what 15 do you put out in the pitch? Like, what is Connacht's best 15? I'm not asking to name that, but like, do you think that's been a problem this year? Do you think there's been too much kind of moving in and out? Is that just been from necessity, or has it been from trying to figure out who the best players are? But what's your thoughts on that?
Do you think there's been more movement, more rotation this year than there has been other years? I actually think we've been a little bit more stable this year than other years, which is kind of ironic when you think that the World Cup dominated the early weeks of the season. Now, I know that, you know, we only had three players away with the World Cup, but it still affects how you prep for the season, especially when they're two players as essential as Finlay and Bundy. You know, maybe one of the reasons that you're seeing, as Sam said, you know, Bundy is, you know, is a better player than most of the team. Maybe one of the reasons you notice it so much is because he hasn't been as involved as heavily in pre-seasons and kind of training camps and stuff, because he's been away with Ireland duty so much. I think, did I say it last week or did I say it to you guys? I think that, like, what we are kind of missing in Connacht is maybe that core group of maybe 7 players that start the majority of games that we know well, and then we can rely on, you know, our marquee signing of Cordero when he does finally take the pitch, or of Mac or of Bundy coming back from international duty to bring that X factor, to bring that spark and excitement in the big games. I think you're right. I think kind of one of the problems at the minute is we don't really know our best start in 15. Look, there is injury problems. Everybody has them. I understand that. It has been a long season thus far. Do you know, like, we had, you know, 9 unbroken games up until 2 or 3 months ago, and then kind of stop start Asia the last couple of weeks. But I think, you know, we all said at the time Marmion going felt like it wasn't a good thing necessarily, never really what would be. I think maybe we need to go back to basics a bit more and get a core group of level-headed players that can I'm not saying that people, you know, we need to ship out players or ship in players. I'm just saying that with the players that we have, build a more cohesive unit that we can rely on, you know, just to, as you guys say, just to do the basics quite well, just to, you know, that we know what we're doing off every restart. Doesn't matter if it's the same thing every time. Doesn't matter if they know it's coming. If we catch it and boot it 20, 30 meters down the pitch and they have a line out, grand. Like, that's how most teams do it. But for some reason, we insist on going for two or three phases beforehand. Like, I used to excuse it and think that, like, oh, well, we had a history of kind of running those running the ball back, and maybe that's what we were looking for. But it doesn't even seem that way at the minute. I thought our attack was a little bit better against Pau last week, but I still think there's a massive lack of creativity in attack. There's a lack of spark. There's a lack of, as you said, as Sam said, it's kind of easily telegraphed what we're doing. Years ago, we had these wonderful, like, envy of the league strike plays off the back of lineouts and scrums that we just don't seem to have at the minute. Now, it's harder, I suppose, when your set piece statistics aren't as high, when you're not as dominant in a scrum, when you're not as sure at a lineout, it's harder to build those plays off the back. But yeah, it all just seems a little bit loose. It doesn't seem like there's a, at the worst times, you know, not counting the kind of the Bristol win or the Munster win, which the more you look back are kind of outliers really in the league. Those not included, it does seem like there's a lack of cohesiveness on the pitch and a lack of, I don't want to say a lack of drive, but a lack of, I don't want to say, I don't mean this as one person. My point is that it needs to be a leadership group. There is a lack of that doggedness, that pride, that, you know, that grit to pull the rest of the players with you and go up. And whether that is that individuals are trying to do it and the people aren't on the same page, or individuals are trying to do it and people aren't good enough to do it with them, I don't know. But I think it would almost do us great to, like, take the summer off or take the next few months off and just do like a 3 month summer camp, you know, somewhere, and just drill the fuck into the lads and, you know, get used to each other, because it's, there's combinations that have been there for 2 or 3 years that don't look like they're used to playing together.
I keep coming back to, and Sam, I'll come to you now in a sec, but, like, I genuinely don't think it's a talent thing. It's not a talent thing or a skill thing. I think, again, with Connacht, it's all mental. It's all, I just think they're a mentally soft team, and I know that seems very harsh, but it just seems to be the case, because, like, we've seen them play incredibly well, and we've seen the exact same players, you know, put incredible phases and win some big games. So, like, again, if they can do it once, I'm not saying you're going to do it every game, but, like, you know, there shouldn't be then the amazingly bad blunders. Like, Connacht are gifting 14 points a game probably to the opposition. Like, and you're just not good enough to start 14 points down and try and overcome that. Like, there's a world where a clinical and more, like, more focused Connacht, you know, win that game comfortably enough at the weekend. Because again, they're scoring 24 points. But, like, you know, you're gifted at least two tries to Bennett on the weekend from not dealing with high balls and silly mistakes, and then you're like, yeah, well, then no shit, we didn't win the game. Of course we didn't. Like, we're not scoring 50 points to overcome that. And it's just, again, it's down to mistakes and mental fragility. And I don't know. Again, that's the question. That's harder to fix than skill deficit, which I don't think is the problem with this kind of squad. I don't think there's a lack of talent there. I really don't. We all believe in the talent in the squad. But it's just the couple of inches between the ears, is to say, that I think is where they're lacking. But Sam, do you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, completely agree. It's hard. You defend it. I've been defending it for years. I think that there's a lot of leaders in that Connacht team. I think Joe Joyce is a leader. I think that Conor Oliver looks every bit a leader. Cian Prendergast looks like a leader. I think Bundy is just a talismanic leader. Sim Finley. But I just don't think that they're, as a whole, as a group, like Wesley said, I don't think they're acting in a leadership manner. I don't think there's any John Muldoon pulling them up. I don't think that's, you know, Carty and Blade are the two captains. I don't think that they're the inspirational captains that you look for. I personally kind of just feel like a captain on a rugby team should be a second row or a back row forward. It just makes the most sense, I think, personally. How you divide up your leadership group, you might have a captain of the forwards or a scrum captain or whatever you want to call it. That might be the case, but it does look like when the times are going tough, there's no one pulling them up. I you know, they've been more dogged in times this year. There's games there that they've seen out. The first couple of games this year, I thought they saw out. They got Sharks away. It was a poor performance, but a good win. There are games there that you've gone, yeah, they're very close. There's also three games there in Edinburgh, Leinster, and the Benetton League game that you've lost by within a score in the last minute, and you think that's not a big step up to be so much better off where we could be right now in terms of league position. All of those things would breed a better mentality, but they look very much like a team devoid of confidence, and they need to be confident. I don't think Leinster lose confidence. I think that Leinster just, they do a Michael Jordan. They just decide they're confident. They just say, like, and I took that personally, and they just go out and win, regardless of what's going on in the back room, regardless of what's going on off the pitch or what's going on the week before. They can just pick themselves up and do it. And that might be the special little thing that keeps the likes of a Turner and Osborne in the Leinster camps and offload some of the other players. Like, we picked up some phenomenal players that have come through Leinster set up and the Leinster system in the past. You know, we've Daly and Farrell, they came through. We've Sean O'Brien now, Jack Ainger, Peter Dooley. These are players, they're phenomenal. They're some of our best skill set players. Maybe, and I'm not individually calling out any of their mentalities, but maybe that's the reason why they didn't quite make it at Leinster. Maybe they just don't have that extra 1% of belief, for, you know, the ability to just forget, the ability to take the next shot, as they say in golf, you know, not dwell on the past. Like, that mental side of things, which is almost unquantifiable, is just so integral to being able to compete for an entire season. And that might be the reason why some players that you wouldn't expect to leave, some of our better players might end up leaving, because that could be the case for them. And the coaches, I think if the coaches are ruthless, I actually think I'd have a lot of respect for the coaches now if they're ruthless. And there's some players that I would hate to see leave, but if they go and the coaches can justify it, something I was speaking to someone else about this the other day was like, when Niall Murray wasn't playing all season and we were sitting here like the arseholes we are saying, why isn't he playing? He's clearly our best player. He's all this. And then John Muldoon literally addressed it in a press conference. He said he wasn't doing enough around the park. He was really good defensive lineouts, but we wanted him to do these other things. And that's why Darren Murray was playing ahead of him. And then John Muldoon said, and he's addressed those things and he's doing them better. And that's now why he's got his game. And that's what I think, coaches need to be ruthless like that. And you said about like our starting 15, like, I don't think we know what our starting 15 is. The coaches do seem to have an idea of the players they like in their starting 15, and it might not necessarily agree with the outside world. Like, I'm seeing Tom Farrell on the bench going, why is he there? I'm seeing Conor Oliver on the bench going, why is he there? But the coaches seem to be going with that. They seem to be picking Hurley Langton ahead of them. They seem to be picking Hawkshaw at 13. So they have an idea. It might not be what we agree, but they're seeing them day in, day out. And I think if these coaches show their ruthless streak and they go for it now in the off season or pushing towards the end of this season, it could be the making of it. And I'm being positive here and kind of optimistic and saying that it I hope it is the making of the team. And I hope that Mark Sexton's plan kind of clicks and that John Muldoon really gets the hang of it. And Scott Fardy grows into the role of defensive coach, because there's parts of every game where I've gone, just extrapolate that out over the course of an 80 minutes and we're an extremely high functioning team.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, in regards to the coach, I'd be fully on board with not a clean out, but like, if you need to let some names go or even drop them for a couple of games, like, if that's the way they want to go about it. Like, we've heard reports that Mark Sexton's a bit of a bastard, like, do you know what I mean? He's a bit ruthless. I think that's exactly what they need. I think the problem is they've been probably, you know, coddled for too long and you know, that it's been very, very nice, everything gets on well. And we kind of seen that it doesn't necessarily work the whole time. So someone coming in like Mark Sexton, now the problem is if Mark Sexton leaves within a year and goes to Leinster, you know what I mean? That's the problem, and then you're kind of back to square one again.
But he's done a really good job of making himself less desirable this year. Just saying.
Yeah, well, but maybe the longer he stays, the harder it'll be for him to leave. But you know, I think that I would welcome that. I think that's because, again, we've enough proof now where the other side really isn't working. And do you know what I mean? I think something has to change. But again, I mean, we're just talking in potentials here. Wes, any final thoughts before we move on? Or are you happy to leave it at that? Kind of, again, the misery.
Yeah, like, we're all a bit down still because of the result. Like, one of the things we were crediting this team for earlier on the season was, as you guys said, like, the win against Sharks, like, seeing out these wins in difficult manners and not playing well but getting the result. I think you said it really well there. Like, going to... been in Benetton twice in 3 weeks and two drastically different results. It's just frustrating. It's like I said, I mean, what was it? Like, after 30 minutes that they had four tries, you know, it's just disheartening to watch. And look at, I said last week, in the grand scheme of things, I don't really care about the Challenge Cup. I didn't really think we were going to win it. The win against Power was great. if we carry that confidence forward. It looks like we did not carry that confidence forward against Benetton. So for me, that's about how we recover. Like, finishing eighth in this league is now the most important thing for Connacht. Well, as well it should be. There's nothing else to cheer on. But is it all okay if we finish in the top eight? I don't know. Maybe we still have to ask some questions of that we've been asking. But I don't want to take away from there have been good results throughout the season. We had a great start to the season, but it's the string. It's the last 2 months, really, where we started to see things. Well, 3 months, I suppose, where things have started to kind of fall off. The games in between the Six Nations and now. If we finish strong, there's still plenty here for us. You know, I do think there is a lot to come for the team. As I say, I'm not calling for coaches' heads or players to be dropped. It's more of a unifying that I'm looking for. So, huge game next weekend against Ebre. Like, it just is. Like, there's no other way you can say it. Like, that. Home against Ebre and then away to Dragons. These are the two biggest games in the world right now because we have to win and we have to win well.
Yeah, as the phrase Sam loves, a must-win game next weekend, even if that's not necessarily true, just for the general vibes but around the club. But we've talked enough misery around Connacht, so apologies for that listening, but we just wanted to give our honest feedback too. But let's move on to, as already mentioned, Jordy Barrett's upcoming team, Leinster. They played their old rivals, La Rochelle, in the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup in the Aviva, sold out Aviva, 50,000 people, good atmosphere. And hats off to Leinster, they slayed the beast. I didn't think they had it in them, especially the deficit that they did. They beat them 40 points to 13, a 27 point hammering in any man's book, and fully deserved. They what impressed me most, Sam, it was Leinster's physicality and aggression. I think that's where La Rochelle the last couple of years have really, gotten to them. The likes of Will Skelton has just, you know, he's eaten them up. He's gotten their heads. They're always wary of him. The likes of Botti and all them, they're just so incredibly physical, and Leinster just couldn't get over that hump. And with the likes of Joe McCarthy, the likes of Jenkins, and just a general sort of attitude shift, I feel like they really met them halfway, went toe-to-toe with them physically. And then I think when that happened, Leinster's kind of overall skill and game plan really could actually shine, and they put up 40 points in them, and they were well worth it. I know La Rochelle haven't been their best this year, but still, you know, we know what it, with kind of bogey teams, this has definitely been a bogey team for them. I know they won the group games, but beating them in a knockout game in the quarterfinal, having lost the last 2 years in knockout games to them and the final last year, this is big for Leinster. I think this is I know they're probably going to be favourites now anyway, but this is one of those games where, like, okay, they actually could go on now and win it.
I think that there would be an expectation now. I think it would be anything other than a win in the Champions Cup, personally, would be a disappointment, having gotten over La Rochelle the way they did. They beat them up and then beat them on the scoreboard. You know, they got the big score at the end. They had to earn the big score. La Rochelle weren't great, but Leinster made them not great. The picking of Connors instead of Van der Fleer, just chop, tackling. It was so impressive to watch. Neen Byers' defensive system getting up in their face. They didn't get outside of them or over them as much as they, or at all. Whereas that was probably the only way that they were going to get around the ferociousness of that Leinster defense. Like you said, they manned up, they stepped up, they weren't beaten up physically, which is the area that has gotten to them in the past. And that's a scary prospect going forward for Leinster, especially when you add Orgies Nyman and Jordy Barrett into the mix. But yeah, phenomenal performance. They played so well. I think some of their attacking rugby was also unbelievable. I think Bossier, Will Skelton, they tried their hardest to get under the Leinster skin, and just, I don't think it fazed Leinster. I think that Leinster picked the team to beat them. I think McCarthy was a great pick. I think having Jenkins in there just giving another little bit of ballast. I think, to a man, everyone was excellent. You see, like, Rossburn getting a lot of plaudits. He was very, very good. He wasn't Sexton-esque, but I don't think he needs to be Sexton-esque. I think it was West, he kind of said this last week, whereas Gibson Park has really turned himself into almost that DuPont role. Not quite the same as DuPont, but he's taken a lot of pressure off the out half shoulder. So the heir apparent to Sexton doesn't need to be Sexton anymore because of how good Gibson Park is inside him. And then when you got like Henshaw outside and Osborne, there's they're taking a lot of pressure off Ross Byrne, allowing him to play his game, and he played it phenomenally. So I think the expectation will be to win, and I actually think it'll be a disappointment if they don't, especially given that they have the Croke Park semi. It all adding up for them now. They've gotten rid of La Rochelle where they needed to, and I don't think that they'll fear anyone in the next round or in the final, having done it. You know, Toulouse could potentially be the final, and that's another one that people will start kind of going, oh, that's a bogey team, but I don't think that they'll feel that way. I think that they'll be over the moon with this. I think that, unlike the group stage game, I feel that the Monkey will feel off their back in this one. I think that they'll all have the confidence going forward because of how well they played. They didn't fluke it. They didn't kind of all batten down the hatches and see it out and just stop a La Rochelle late flurry and, you know, win it because there was a held up try over the line. They significantly beat them in every aspect of the game.
Yeah, big time. Westy, Ross Byrne, we have to give a shout out to him. I thought he was absolutely phenomenal. I think he finished with, God knows what he finished with points wise. I think it was close to 20, if not more. You know, a big year for him with Sexton's departure. A lot of expectation on him, obviously, for his Trout's career. But it feels like, in fairness, it feels like in big games he normally shows up. And this weekend was another example of that. Has he gone up in your estimations after this weekend?
You're the one who said that Ulster, he wouldn't make the Ulster team. So I think you are.
I did not say that. Never. When did I say that?
Absolutely said that. He said he wouldn't.
I said he should go to Ulster.
And he said he wouldn't even. He said he'd be a good backup to Billy Burns. He said.
I am by no means a Billy Burns fan.
You said Billy Burns should be starting the World Cup. You said Sexton out.
I said Burns. There's space beside Ben Healy in that scrap heap. If you're more than welcome to join him.
I was too busy thinking of that joke. I forgot the question. Ross Byrne rising to form. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I said at the start of the season, it'd be interesting to see him fill the Sexton void. And you guys pointed out that obviously Sexton doesn't play that much in the regular season for Leinster. You know, he only plays these kind of games necessarily. But I think with Sexton going, it's more of a void that's left within the squad. You know, he was always kind of he was always like a player coach. You know, he wasn't a player coach, but he was always that kind of mentality. I think he was that kind of presence on the pitch. He was kind of demanding in what he asked from his players. And as Sam said, as we said last week, Gibson Park has kind of evolved and kind of changed the way that not the way they play or anything that drastic, but more the way that internal structure is managed. You know, it's a far more nine-centric game, or far more like, called from the nine than we're used to seeing from Leinster. But like, that doesn't mean that things aren't been called from Ross Byrne. What we're kind of seeing from Ross Byrne, and I am surprised about it because he is just back from injury as well, is kind of a relaxed confidence in the position. He seems far more mature maybe than we're used to seeing him before. Obviously, I mean, the accuracy from his kicking was never a problem. That's never something that we questioned too much. It was kind of the other things around the pitch. And, you know, I made this point as regards the Ireland team around the Six Nations, I think after the France game, but the evolution of the game plan and the evolution of players around the 10, I think, has taken a lot of pressure off Ross Byrne to be Sexton, to be that Sexton-esque shout, roaring instructions. I think the fact that Gibson Park... I don't know if Gibson Park calls the plays or whatever it is, but Gibson Park seems to kind of run things his own way as the nine. You know, he tracks those lines, he has those pick and goes, and he's got great centres outside him, Henshaw, and I think it was Osborne as well at the weekend. You know, I think that's allowed him kind of to slide into his position in a different manner than Sexton and be a little bit more, as I say, relaxed and confident about it. And I am happy to see him doing well and playing well and, you know, getting a bit of the respect that maybe the likes of us didn't give him a long time ago. But yeah, it's just whether or not they can follow through on it now as well is the interesting point. After all these years of sex and holding them back, you know, it's just funny.
I did. Someone tweeted that. I retweeted it saying, like, it makes you think. Someone thought I was being serious. That Johnny Sexton has been holding Leinster back and Ireland for the last couple of years. But, like, good hill to die on. Good take. I like that. I just, you know, Brian O'Driscoll, obviously, he can't wait for Harry to get back into the team and eventually dominate that 10 jersey for the last couple of years, as he should have been. Leinster go on. They'll be favourites to win it. Interesting to see if they do. Moving on to the last Irish team in contention this weekend, and at least we weren't the only Irish team to take a hammering this weekend. Thank God for Ulster. Ulster on Saturday travelled to Claremont Auvergne, and they got their asses handed to them, similar to ourselves, 53 points to 14. Not a good day at the office. Started not too bad in contention, and then towards the first half, end of the first half and second half, Claremont made their themselves known physically and in every other aspect of the game, and ran up a bit of a score on them, 53 points in total, which is by no means a bad score. 33 points in the second half alone. Yeah, disappointing end to the European season for Ulster, but sort of seen this coming a little bit. Obviously, they haven't been playing well. There's been a lot of turnover, a lot of change in this team and in the management. So, Westy, I think you said last week you feared a bit of a good beating here for Ulster, and it looks like you were correct. What did you think of this game?
God, in my worst opinions, I didn't think it was going to go that badly. Funny enough, I thought Ulster actually looked well again for the first, majority of the first half. I think, you know, like it's a tough kind of road for them, the 2 weeks in France. You know, you wonder should teams, and you know, it didn't work for La Rochelle, but should more teams look at the option of staying in the country for a week and training and getting used to the conditions? But obviously, you know, the cost of that becomes kind of unsustainable for clubs like, that aren't Leinster and La Rochelle. I think typical to kind of form, the French team kind of fell back on a power game. I thought Yatao and Peter Gustavakula were unbelievable, you know, for them, and giving them generating go forward ball at all times and keeping Ulster under pressure for large parts of the game. It's hard to say exactly what went wrong from the Ulster camp. I think Claremont got on top relatively early and managed to build that sustained pressure. I mean, it was a great day in Claremont as well. Look, the stadium was sold out. It's a difficult place to go. As we say, they have a really strong, storied European pedigree. And I just think, again, you have to remember that this has been quite a disruptive period for Ulster. You know, they do just have a new coach who's 3-4 weeks in the job. Okay, he knows some of the players. He knows this, he knows that. But it's a new system come in. And they started with a really difficult tour to South Africa. You know, I said last week that it probably galvanized them for the Montpellier game, but unfortunately, this was just a bit too far. No more than us, they need to look back on the league and almost preparing themselves for next season, putting themselves in the best position possible, making sure they get into the top eight. It was a bit of a wake up call, I think, from people who, you know, who maybe thought the South Africa tour didn't go that bad, and you know, the win against Montpellier was going to be this massive turning point for them. I think it just shows how much work there is still to do. Similar to Connacht, it's not a bad team. You know, there's a lot of players in that team that you'd take into any squad and you'd love to have, but for some reason, their game management, their game plan just doesn't seem very inspired. When they were behind in a power game, they didn't really seem to know what to do to change that. I don't know, is Doak the answer at 10? I know it's only the second or third time he's played a 10. I'm not trying to throw a young man under the bus, but I know you said you're not the biggest fan of Billy Burns, but with letting him go, I think it's Richie Murphy's son is going up there next season as well. Did I read that correctly? It's too early to call it, right? But it just seemed a very, very difficult game to put him in a 10 at. And I think parts of it were exposed in terms of the game management. So again, I was trying to avoid really been too harsh on it, because it's not one player. I'm not saying that's the end of it, but to a player who isn't a 10 being put in at 10 for the handful of times this season in that environment was extremely difficult. And I think even if they didn't target him directly down the 10 channel, targeting that lack of cohesion with a massive forward running pack was clearly one of the staples of the Claremont game plan.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's a great point with Doak and Flannery. Like, what does the future look like? What's next season look like? What's the season after that look like at the 10 jersey, especially such an important jersey? I next season, I just want to see more from Doak, whether that's a 9 jersey or 10 jersey. Like, you know, what's it been 2 years now since he's been on the scene? And I feel like he hasn't really progressed, yeah, potentially even 3 years. I feel like he hasn't really taken that next step that I because we all think he's a very talented player and he has all the physical assets for the position. But I just haven't seen him really progress. And maybe that's just been the stink around Ulster this year, and that maybe might change next year. But I would like to see him take a bit of a leap next year. And the same for Flannery. We keep hearing how talented he is, but I suppose he has to be given the chance too. But Sam, your thoughts on Ulster at the weekend?
Yeah, I thought they were actually okay in the first half. I think it just got away from them. I think that the travel has probably caught up with them. New systems haven't been able to be implemented. The hangover, ill feelings after the Dynamo of Ireland era quite still evident. You know, when things go wrong, they go really wrong. And that's what tends to happen. You get a new manager bounce, and that's all well and good if it goes well. But if not, there are still the underlying reasons as to why the coach was let go when he was and why the CEO is being let go. There's institutionalized badness in that club at the moment, and it's going to take a bit longer than a couple of weeks to get rid of it. So I thought that they had moments. I thought Doak actually ran it okay at 10 for the first half, and then just they got beaten up in the second half, and it was quite hard to watch, and I'd say even harder as an Ulster fan. It did make the Connacht one a little slightly easier to watch because we weren't as poor. But I think the Claremont, like Wesley said, they've got European pedigree. It's a hard place to go, and there's been a lot of travelling for this Ulster team. So I don't think that they will. I said last week, I think they will have eyes on the tournament as a whole, because it would have been there for the taking if they got past Claremont. But same thing with Connacht, they just didn't. And realistically, trying to get top eight is first and foremost what they need to do, because it's all well and good talk about rebuilds. It's all well and good talk about where the kickoff money is going to go. If they're going to replace them, if they're going to be allowed to use that money to replace them, it's much harder to keep players, and it's much harder to recruit players if you're not in the Champions Cup. I don't think Connacht have any chance of winning the Champions Cup next year. I don't think they'll even be able to get out of the pool. But I think getting into the pool is genuinely the most important thing, because it allows an extra contract or two to be signed. There's a couple of players there, the Hurley Langtons, the Angers, that will have had murmurings in their ear, you know, talking like, oh, come this way, especially Hurley Langton, because he's not Irish qualified for 3 more years. There will have been big talk to go somewhere for him, back to New Zealand, go France, go England, somewhere. But he stayed. And I say part and parcel of staying put is because you want to be involved in the Champions Cup, because he's that caliber of a player. So it's a really important time for Connacht. I don't, you know, I actually think I was kind of thinking this the other day, that the Challenge Cup needs a bit more respect, because I think it's actually a really enjoyable tournament. And I think it's a European tournament with some quality rugby teams in it, that allows for some really good, enjoyable games. And it doesn't get respect, partially because the TV broadcasters, the carry it, don't even give it the respect it should get. But I think if you put a bit more respect to the name of it, it wouldn't seem like such a bogey prize getting into it. But while it is that bogey prize, while it is less finances, less potential sponsorship deals, Ulster, Connacht need to be getting into it and getting into that top eight. So they'll be disappointed to get knocked out. They'll be disappointed in the manner. But if they don't allow it to seep into the rest of their season in terms of performances, and they can get over the line, it won't matter in the end. From the 10 point of view, what you were talking about, I think the kits off money will go towards the 10. Petri said in his Q&A that it was Doak and Flannery going forward. I don't think even he wanted that to be the case. I think Ulster fans are saying that maybe Doak isn't necessarily as good at nine as he showed the prospects of, and that's why Cooney's been signed on for longer, and he is a better nine right now. Doak's a little bit slower in the delivery, from what I've, you know, heard from Ulster fans and seen myself. So the 10 might be his position, but realistically, if they could put any of that kids off money towards someone, I think they'd be happy to have a starter come in ahead of the two boys.
Well, some of that kids-off money is they've taken a page out of the Connacht book, and they've signed some speedy backs with Werner Kock coming in from the South African Sevens fame. I know that was announced a few months ago, but and he won't be anywhere near the money kids-off was on, but still.
I do love, like, weird signing, but I am a huge fan of Werner Kock. I think he's just one of those players that, like, I would love him to be on my team.
Obviously, I'd love his hair.
Speaking of, sorry, weird signings, it's only when you mentioned him there, Pitako Suakula, Westies, I remember when Claremont signed him, and I was thinking, like, what an absolutely strange thing. The All Blacks capped him once, maybe twice, to stop him playing for Fiji, and then he just packed it in and moved to France. I guarantee he plays for Fiji in about 4 years' time or 3 years' time, whenever the stand-down rule is, but it was such a strange, because he was ripping it up in Super Rugby for like a year or two. And then they were like, oh, can't let Fiji have anything nice. Let's just play them once.
Exactly.
You play international basketball for Fiji at like 14.
Class. Love. Yeah, well, that's what maybe can't, again, can't be a basketball team. Who, you know,
the problem with this is, and I was going to say when you said the thing about the volleyball, is we would still be beaten by Jenkins and Orgies Nyman and Caelan Dyers. Like, we wouldn't be the best volleyball
I'm not saying Leinster also turn. Let them do the rugby. They've got the rugby sewn up. They're not moving.
They'll see us doing it and sign some non-Irish qualified volleyball lad to come in to make up for the fact that all their volleyball lads are already the best in playing for Ireland. And we'll just be second best at that as well.
How about beach volleyball?
Ooh.
You know, like if we could master the elements, like beach volleyball out on fucking Spittle Pier, that would be fucking interesting. I tell you that for nothing.
Here we go. I've just Googled the best volleyball players in the world. So here's a future signing for Leinster from Cuba, Miguel Angel Lopez. Big round of applause to Miguel for joining the goys.
We'll be looking at that Asian market. Like, they won't necessarily be as tall as the rest of the world, but they have.
We've kind of signed Craig Laidlaw as their primary jumper. My God damn it! All right, we will leave it there. It's been a negative one, but look, hopefully we'll be back next week. Well, here's the thing: next week it's either going to be either way more negative, or we're going to be back on the winning train. So you know what I mean? There's going to be nothing in between here, which is fantastic. But
you don't have just like that was a good performance against Ed Ray. Like it is win.
It's either we're going to win the URC or sack them all and put the under-20s out there. Put the Eagles out there. Play the Eagles instead.
Is there anyone? Lads, is there anyone you'd like to see? Like, what would you like to see in terms of your lineup? A couple of players are probably injured, but what do you want to see? Because it's there. People are calling out for changes, and I just don't know what changes they want because I don't know who is better than the players that are playing. Tom Farrell, maybe, but that's, you know, Tom Farrell and Conor Oliver are the two for me that I'd like there that I want to see, but that's it.
I think Farrell and Ford, I think they're a really good partnership early on in the season. I'd love to see it come back.
You drop them, Bunny.
But Bunny's not going to play the Zebra in the Dragons game. Bunny's going to come back for the last three games. So I'm okay with that, yeah.
What about if you do lose the next two games and then you only have, what, many games after that, then three?
Three.
Why would you just play Kyle Ford and Hugh Gavin for the rest of the season? Like, at what stage do you just, as you say with the Bunny thing, like, given just, if Kyle Ford and Hugh Gavin is your future at centre, just give them reps, because like at the end of the day you're not going to really get anywhere currently. So what if Hugh Gavin and Kyle Ford turn out to be the future Irish? I'm not saying they will, but like, I don't know, it's more like if the season's gone at some stage, do you just do that instead? But like, if you're still in contention, definitely Conor Oliver and Tom Farrell. I get really pissed off with this kind of thing of like, if someone's moving on, we're not playing yet. Like, we don't have the depth for that sort of stuff. I'm sorry, we just don't.
Yeah, Gavin Thornbury is another case in point. But yeah, the rumor Tom Farrell's going to Munster is quite sickening, because I think he'd be a massive loss. I think he's a class player and he should be starting for us. And if he is moving and that's why he's not playing, that's a damn shame. But I'd like to see them. I would like to see Porch or Jennings in at fullback. Like, I've seen Tiernan. I like Tiernan. I love Tiernan in terms of what he's done for Connacht. He's not the same Tiernan he was a few years ago. He's not got that turn of pace. He's supposedly extremely good at organising a backline defensively, and that's brilliant. But our backline and the rest of our defence in this year has been a mix of both extremely, extremely strong and porous as anything. So I think that you can forego that for more exciting attacking talent right now. I think that that's what you need, just to even get people's kind of mentality up a little bit. So Jennings or Porchy into fullback for me would be one.
Yeah, Jennings was brilliant. I forgot to say that when I was talking. He was absolutely one of the few bright sparks. So, yeah, seeing him for the rest of the season, I wouldn't be unhappy about that. But we shall see what team lines out against Zebra. We'll wrap up there, boys. Appreciate it as always, and we will catch you next week.
Night-night.